This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to For the Pod.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of What the Puck. It is a Washington Capitals podcast. Thank you for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. Well, the trade deadline is gone. It's upon us. The Caps kind of were quiet, but we made a trade here. Coach Dan has left the show, and I'm joined by Ryan Drury.
What?
From MWO Sports Podcast. Ryan, how's it going, man?
It's going really well, gentlemen. How you doing? I just want to reiterate, I have not been traded for Dan. Dan's still here.
Not doing good anymore.
Oh, hey, Coach. What's up, man? How you doing?
Screw you, Brandon.
All right. Well, Dan's still here. We didn't make any trades, but we are joined today by Ryan Drury. He's one of the hosts of the MWO Sports Podcast, coming out of Ontario. Guys, we're here to talk a little bit about the Caps. Ryan, it's been a little while. You joined us last time for What the Puckies. So we haven't heard from you in a while. We haven't heard from you this season. Why don't you tell us, you know, overall, what's your thoughts on the Caps so far for this year?
They're kind of hard to pigeonhole right now. I think everybody was kind of, you know, when we talked last year at the end of the year, another loss to the Pittsburgh Penguins, which I wasn't very happy about. We knew, I think, going into this season that they weren't going to be as strong a team as they were last year, and they haven't been. But for the majority of the season, they've surprised holding on to first place in the Metro. I feel, though, that the last month or so has revealed that the reason why they've been doing that is because everybody else in the Metro was pretty inconsistent and not hitting their stride. Certainly, you look at Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Neither of those two were playing their best hockey. The Devils have gotten better. Columbus is a so-so team. The Canes are starting to fall off. But overall, the Capitals were getting away with things earlier in the season and banking points based on the strong play of guys like Alex Ovechkin, who, again, is carrying this team with little to no help on a consistent basis. Now, as teams have started to get better and better, particularly Pittsburgh and Philly, they're red hot. The cracks are starting to show in this lineup that I think we all knew were there under the guise of going, oh, we're in first place, though. I mean, over the last 3 weeks, I can say that the Capitals have been an unmitigated disaster. I mean, that watching them try and play defense makes me physically ill. They are tough to watch in their own zone. Like, I think that people kind of got into the habit of looking at last year's team and how dominant they were offensively and the point total they racked up and thought, well, you know, we lost Carl Alsner, but basically the same defensive core is coming back. Orlov had a good season last year. Matt Niskanen was great, and Niskanen's been great again this year. I think that too many people thought, well, you know, it won't be that big of a drop-off. But if you look at some of the numbers lately, the drop-off is there. And it's not because of Carl Alsner. It's simply because this team has lost a ton of depth up front. When you look at defensively responsible guys like Marcus Johansson was, like Justin Williams was, and Justin Williams playing really well for the Hurricanes, the team just – I think that they're really starting to tune Barry Trotz out. And I remember saying to you guys last year at the end of our little playoff wrap-up, if you want to call it that, teardown even that we did, I remember telling you guys that I was telling friends of mine that I didn't want to watch the team unless they fired Barry Trotz. And I was willing to come into the season with a fresh perspective and go, okay, let's see what he can continue to do with the team now that they have a bit of a different look and they lost some guys. In the early part of the season, they were holding it together, but you know, the duct tape and glue is starting to come apart here. And I think that you look at the way that this team plays night after night, they start slow, they finish slow, they constantly are trailing behind teams that aren't as good as them. They leave their goaltenders, and it doesn't matter who it is. We'll talk about that probably more in detail later, the goalie situation. Whoever it is that's in net, they leave them out to dry constantly. And I really feel like Barry Trotz has constantly made really questionable decisions in terms of the personnel he puts on the ice on a consistent basis that just makes people scratch their head a little bit. I don't know what you guys think about it, but I mean, over the last 3 weeks, it's been pretty painful to try and watch this team play.
Yeah, it's definitely been difficult being a Caps fan the last couple weeks. I mean, and like you said, it's hard to argue because they are still number one in the Metro. I mean, you can't get better than number one, really. I mean, you could with the league and everything, but we are seeing cracks in the armor a little bit. And I do think the last couple games, Barry Trotz has made some questionable decisions. But earlier this week was the trade deadline. And, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk came in for the Caps last year. I wasn't happy about that, but they were trying to address the defense. Coach Dan, what did you think about the quiet Monday that the Caps went through with the trade deadline coming? Now, yes, they have two new guys to address some of the defense, but no Mike Green. You know, that was a big name. Everyone thought he was going to be coming back to the Caps, but right now the defense doesn't look that different than it did in the beginning of the season. What's your thoughts on them being quiet?
I was surprised Green wasn't traded in general. You know, the fact that he's still with the Red Wings definitely caught me off guard. I wasn't overly surprised. I think because just their lack of cap space made things a lot more difficult, and their unwillingness, it seemed, to move some of their young guys, which I wasn't necessarily against. But I was a bit surprised that they made two moves for defensemen, considering the fact that I thought that Christian Juice has actually been playing relatively well lately. For them to bring another guy that I don't feel like this is a team that's going to put Orpik up in the press box, no matter how many penalties he decides to take. You know, I think he's a guy that's definitely going to, he's going to get a jersey night after night. And while he's a nice guy to have in the locker room, and I think we were talking before the show about how I actually think it made sense to have him play with, and I might say his name wrong, but Yerebek on his first night, that I felt like it made a lot of sense for them It made a lot of sense that they didn't make a move, but I felt like I wanted them to do something to truly address the defense. Now, Kempney or Yerebek could actually turn out to be quite good and actually do quite well for this team.
I will interrupt you real quick, though, and say with Kempney, I think that's how you say his name, but his first game in Florida, yes, that was a very emotional night, and we'll address that later on in the show, but the first shift he was in or the first period he was a part of, they give up a goal. Not a great start to his Capitals career.
Well, we've seen in the past that players that come in to play for Trotz always struggle in the beginning because they're adapting to the system. You see other teams that don't have that issue when they were brought in new players. I felt like if they were going to make a move for a defenseman, they should have made a bigger move to bring in depth guys, because depth guys wasn't the problem. The problem is that they didn't have enough top guys that could play well defensively. I thought it was interesting that there were rumors they're going after Erik Karlsson at one point. I don't know how true those were or how far they went, or whether they'll, you know, revisit that in the summer. That'll be interesting.
So Holtby has not been Holtby this entire month. Holtby has looked lost out there. He's looked...
Six straight? He's lost? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah. It's crazy to see this guy who was pretty much like a brick wall in front of the goal change within the last month or so. Ryan, let me ask you, what do you think's going on with Holtby? He doesn't look like the Holtby we've all known. You know, he came up through our whole system. We know him from Hershey, and he was a Stingray at some point. We know what kind of game he can play. This is the worst we've seen him. Do you think he's hiding an injury or something?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know that it's an injury, more so that it's just a mental roadblock he's hit lately, where, like, this happens to everybody. I often giggle to myself on Twitter, like, reading the comments from Capitals fans, like, we got to trade Holtby now while his value is still high and let Grubauer take over the starting job. Like, are you high? Like, okay, guy is struggling right now.
Not just Cal. That's DC. Sorry.
No, I know. And you know what? I under understand you, fans that are going, we got to trade him, blah, 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 blah. Because that's like, this is the mentality we've grown up with as Capitals fans. I wouldn't describe myself as an overarching DC sports fan. I don't really watch baseball, so I'm not a Nationals fan, but they're basically the Capitals of the Major League Baseball. I don't really watch basketball, so, but I know about the struggles of the Wizards. And, you know, if you want to even go deeper into DC United, the Redskins too. I mean, like, they're a mess. So I understand that that is what the city sports fans, where their head is at constantly. And as soon as a guy starts struggling, they're like, oh, here it is, because it's us, right? So it must be that he sucks because he plays for us. So let's get rid of him, right? Which is such a stupid thing to say about Braden Holtby. The guy has been arguably the second best goaltender over the last 3 years. I mean, if you want to throw Carey Price ahead of him, Price, who most people would say is the best goalie in the league still. I know Andrei Vasilevsky's probably got the Vezina locked up, but when you look at overall ability, I don't know that anybody wouldn't start with Carey Price if you could have one goalie. That guy struggled mightily at times last year and this year. And I doubt anybody in Montreal that's sane. Tough February. Like, we got to get rid of this guy. He just doesn't have it anymore. I've watched so many good goalies, legendary goalies, over the course of their career struggle. I remember back in the 90s when people were like, oh, Ed Belfour, no way this guy can backstop a team to a Stanley Cup, and he does it with the Dallas Stars. And then he came to Toronto after that as a veteran and was the only reason that the Leafs made the playoffs prior to that first year-long lockout, and they didn't make it since for a long time. So you can't look at a guy like Holtby and all the things he's done. Yeah, he's had a tough month. Am I happy with the way he's playing? No. Is he happy with the way he's playing? Definitely not. I don't think that Holtby is sitting there going, yeah, for sure, I'm definitely trying my hardest. I'm completely mentally prepared, and I'm ready to play every night. He isn't. I also think that, Brandon, what you said about the way the defense is playing in front of him completely has merit to it. Like I mentioned in the, you know, the previous question you asked me, this team is terrible defensively. They can't cover people. They constantly get caught pinching. Their forwards are running around, and, you know, when they lose the puck and then they get it back, their forwards are so all over the place that the defensemen give the puck back because they don't know where the forwards are supposed to be. They're running all over the place. Then a turnover happens, and all of a sudden it's Holtby's fault. Yeah, he's let in a couple bad goals that don't look very nice. So is Grubauer, though. But overall, I think that the team play in front of him is much more concerning than whatever's going on mentally with Holtby right now. He's going to turn it around. He should still be the starting goalie next year and for years beyond that. Everybody needs to just calm down, because trust me, he's the least of our problems.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, but I think it definitely goes hand in hand. I mean, with Holtby's mentality, we know that he talks to, what was it, during the Penguin series, it was like a sports therapist or something like that, yep, to get his mind right, and that's completely fine. I think that's great, but I think the play in front of him also gives him doubt in his own head of like, all right, look at what I got to do now. I'm carrying the workload here. So yeah, these guys are counting on me. I can't let them down. I think it's a little bit of, you know, both, where it's his head that's the problem, while also the play in front of him. And unfortunately, he's kind of stuck with that for the rest of the year. And I don't know how to fix that, but Dan, let me ask you this. We have a very interesting game coming up on Saturday. The Caps will be playing outside against Toronto in the Stadium Series in Annapolis at Navy Stadium. What is the answer for Braden Holtby right now? Just like if you had to, I know the answer is not going to be bench Braden Holtby, but is it a good idea to give him a couple games off maybe after the Stadium Series? You can't take that game away from him. I think that would do more damage to his mentality than anything, taking such a special game away from him. He loves the stage. He loves to be on the ice, but maybe a game or two where he sits and Grubauer plays might help straighten his head out a little bit. What do you think?
I'd be worried if the team started treating this game against Toronto anything more, and I know it'll be difficult, but anything more than just a regular game. It's still 2 points one way or another for one of the teams, and I think you need to treat it almost like any other game. And if you feel like Grubauer right now is the better goaltender or his head in a better space, then I think you have to give him the nod on Saturday. I'm curious to Holtby in regards to his issues, and it's something that they, you know, do you give him time to work it out, or do you give, you know, in terms of playing time, or do you give him time up in the press, or, well, not up in the press box because then there's no one on the bench, but or do you give him time on the bench to sort of re-examine and sort of figure out his problems? It's an interesting thing for a coach to decide. Is it something he needs to play through, or something he needs to mentally, you know, figure out before he can get back out there?
Well, Barry Trotz has not been one to shy away from having somebody sit if he thinks that will do them good. We've seen that with Burakovsky, Tom Wilson. We saw that with Jason Chimera. I mean, there's been plenty of people that have happened to. I don't know if sitting Holtby is the best thing, but maybe it's one of those things. Ryan, what do you think? It might be like, you know, the thing they do with football players now where they take their helmet out if they think they have a concussion. It's for their own good to have them sit down for a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the way that about it in the room and Holtby's on board with it, I mean, yeah, sure. Because I agree with both of you. I mean, like, if the Capitals, because, yeah, it is a regular game. It's a regular season game. It counts for 2 points. It's not like it's worth extra because it's outside and it looks neat. And if they think that Grubauer is, you know, in a better headspace right now, yeah, maybe they should start him. I would start Holtby. I feel like, you know, the next few days where they're off is a good opportunity for him to kind of rejig things in his head, get himself straightened out. And I know it's just a regular game, but do you remember a few years back when the Canucks played, and I can't remember who it was they played. It might've been the Flames or something, or it was Ottawa in the Tim Hortons outdoor game here in Canada, mm-hmm. The Heritage Classic. And they didn't start Luongo. And that basically ruined Luongo's whatever was left of his relationship with the Canucks. That was the year that John Tortorella was the coach of Vancouver, and it was just a horrible disaster. It basically, you know, took a veteran guy who had tons of, at one point, weirdly, was the captain of the Vancouver Canucks, and basically put the final nail in the coffin for him and was like, you know, I'm done here. Like, that wouldn't happen with Holtby if they didn't start him. Obviously, like, we know that Holtby's not going anywhere, and he shouldn't. But I would personally start him, see how he looks. I mean, if he gets himself into trouble, throw Grubauer in there. He's been really good lately. I think that, you know, he's a guy that's struggling right now, but we often forget that these guys are human, right? Like, I don't wake up every day at 100%. There are days I come in and read the news on the radio stations I work for, and I make mistakes. I don't do the best job. And I go home and go, all right, I got to be better tomorrow. And eventually you figure it out. And then, you know, like any other day, you'll hit a hot run where you're doing really well at your job. He's the same way. The guy's a human being, and he's got a ton of pressure on him because I think that he knows, like you said, Brandon, he has to be a huge contributor to this team's success, even more so than the last couple of years when he won a Vezina trophy and was a finalist the other year. He's got to be even better because the team isn't playing that good. But I would start him, and at the end of the day, just calm down. Give this guy a break. If there's a couple guys on the Caps roster that deserve a benefit of the doubt from the fans, it's Braden Holtby and certainly Alex Ovechkin. And I remember a couple of years ago when people were going, oh my God, Ovechkin only got 60-something points this year. He's broken. He's on the decline. And then he rattles off 3 straight 50-goal seasons. Like, this is the same situation to me. The guy tied an all-time wins record. Like, just relax for a second. The team isn't as good. He'll figure it out. I promise.
All right, well, you heard it here first. Ryan promises he'll figure it out, and that's what we want to see. So let's talk a little bit more about this Stadium Series game. It is, like you said, another game. It's the NHL. This is a cash grab for the NHL. Let's just be honest. It is a cool It is a cool setting. I mean, to see hockey in Annapolis, I mean, that's a huge deal. That's the state capital of Maryland. That is a huge deal. That is something I never thought I would see. So it is a really cool background, but it is just a game to these guys. Big news that happened recently is Austin Matthews, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the star, the number one draft pick a couple of years ago. He's hurt and will not be playing in the Stadium Series game. Dan, I sent you a picture. I went to Verizon. Sorry, bad habit. I went to Capital One Arena, and they had Stadium Series gear, and there it was, Matthews versus Ovechkin. It looked like an old 90s bootleg Super Bowl t-shirt that you paid $5 from a guy in a parking lot for. It had pictures of Matthews and Ovechkin on it. They were billing this as, you know, two of the best players going against each other, and now that's not happening. What does this do to the Caps? And what does it do to the NHL as a whole covering this game to see that the star, probably the only guy, no offense, Ryan, since you're the Canadian guy here, but probably the only guy fans in the U.S. know is a Toronto Maple Leaf. What does it do to the NHL? What's it do to the Caps that he doesn't play? Dan, I'm going to go to you first.
I feel like the Stadium Series games are kind of watered down, probably not the right term, but they've just been used or done so much that at this point it's really not as big of a deal outside of the two teams that are playing in it. So it's not like the Winter Classic where you're playing on New Year's. It's
which this year had the lowest ratings of any Winter Classic, but go on.
And I wonder if part of that's because they have so many more outdoor games. Like at first it was like, what? They're playing outside and it's snowing?
Right.
What is this? And now it's like, oh, they're playing outside again. Oh, okay, cool. I like that. It's very interesting. Let's see how they do. You know, people don't care as much. So, you know, this Saturday, I don't even know if I'll be watching at this point because it's, I mean, I would like to, but it's not as exciting as it used to be because it's not as big of a deal as it used to be. I think Matthews being out hurts some of the drama to some expense, but it's just another game at the end of the day. You know, it's not as big of a deal, I think, at this point. It'd be great to win because that'd be three outdoor game wins, but it's just another game right now.
Now, Ryan, what do you think as far as the Caps go? How do they change up their game? Do they do anything differently now that the big star, Austin Matthews, isn't going to be there?
Do they play defense?
Well, yeah. Well, there's the big question, right, is like how they're going to look. Because, yeah, obviously entertainment-wise, it might hurt the product because Austin Matthews, I mean, he's a big U.S. star. He's got a lot of pull down there in the States, as he should. He's a tremendous player. He's one of my favorite players to watch. The way he can control the ice already at such a young age. I can't wait to see what he looks like when he's 25. I mean, I think this kid is just going to be utterly dominant. Yeah, maybe it hurts the entertainment value for the casual fan. I think the diehards will still watch. I unfortunately can't watch the game. I'm going to have to record it because I have to call a junior playoff game here in Ontario. But, in terms of the Caps, I mean, Toronto still has tons of weapons, and people should be aware of some of these guys down there. I mean, William Nylander has really rebounded after a bit of a bumpy start. He was having a bit of trouble around Christmas. This young Swedish kid, he's a magician with the puck, and he can finish. He's a big reason why Austin Matthews has all the space he does out there. He's a really, really dangerous player. Mitch Marner has rebounded so well the last month, after just having a brutal sophomore slump to start the year. This kid is almost Patrick Kane-esque. Mm-hmm. He's got the same type of qualities to him. He's not afraid to try things. He's got incredible hands. I watched him his entire career in the OHL. He is real smooth, and he's confident right now. He's on fire. Patrick Marleau is having a great season. You got JVR there, and their goaltender is, frankly, one of the best goalies in the league this year. Frederik Andersen has stopped more shots than any other starting goaltender in the NHL, and his numbers are pretty unbelievable as well. For the Capitals, yeah, no Matthews. They're going to be able to control the center ice maybe a little bit more, but all those guys I just mentioned, like, Toronto's coming to town for a win here, and they're hot. They want to make sure that they could potentially try and pass the Boston Bruins and get home ice advantage in the playoffs. They're coming to Annapolis to win, and whether they have Austin Matthews or not, I don't think it's going to change a ton over the grand scope of the game in terms of the Capitals having some trouble with these guys because they're quick, they move the puck well, and they're playing much better defensively than the Capitals are right now.
All right, just so everybody knows, around puck drop during the day, it's going to be partly cloudy, but around puck drop, it should be about 45 degrees. So, I mean, that's pretty good for hockey weather outside. So, Dan, what else did you want to cover in Caps World? We kind of covered the trade deadline, Holtby, a couple other things. Anything else you wanted to bring up?
Well, we talked about it a little. Well, the Caps recalled Travis Boyd, which I found interesting considering I don't think he's going to play very much. And I imagine the people in Hershey are like, hey, we need him right now because we suck. But I'm curious, and what you guys think in terms of Trotz and if he's going to be here next season is kind of the thing. I know his contract's up at the end of the season, but the more I've been looking at
it,
well, we know how Ryan feels. But I'm just curious in terms of his inability to develop young players is something I've been looking at recently and going, I really can't think of a young guy that has developed well. Tom Wilson, a little bit, but a young guy that's really developed well under Barry Trotz.
It's interesting. I can't think of one. If the Capitals go far in the postseason, yeah, he'll be back. But if they don't,
how far?
If they have to get out of the second round, obviously.
they have to get through Philly, Pittsburgh, or New Jersey, basically, is what it's going to probably end up being.
Right.
Two of the three.
Yes, two of the three. They'll have to get through them. They'll have to get into at least the finals. But have we really thought about, like, looking back at Nashville? I mean, Nashville had a great postseason last year. Yes, they didn't beat Pittsburgh, but they went pretty far. And Barry Trotz was their head coach for how many years before he came to D.C.? I think a lot of people forget that he's a good guy. He does well as an NHL coach, but he didn't have the best track record coming here for the postseason.
Who do you replace him with? That's the question. And Ryan, you may know this better than us, but who do you replace him with? Who's available that you think, A, would come to D.C. and that the Caps would go after?
Well, first of all, let me address the notion that Trotz has never developed anybody, really. When you look
this season, not necessarily like, or on the Capitals right now.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's definitely fair, because this season, yeah, a guy like Jakub Vrána, who's had flashes, yeah, he's struggled. Burakovsky's had struggles, but, you know, I have opinions about his commitment level and the way that he generally approaches the game. There's so much more that he could be doing to help this team be successful. But in terms of guys like in Nashville, like, you look at guys like Shea Weber and Ryan Suter, who are two all-time, in terms of this generation, pillars of defense. Those two guys are sensational. The goaltender there, Pekka, of course, and even before that, Thomas Vokoun really found his footing in Nashville after having a tough start to his career. And when you look at some of the forwards that Nashville had there, I mean, I know this is a dirty name to bring up in Caps land, but Martin Erat had a great career in Nashville under Barry Trotz. Joel Ward had a great career in Nashville under Barry Trotz. He got his playoff reputation playing for Barry Trotz. And the thing about Trotz coming to Washington that I didn't have an issue with at the start was, in Nashville, he never really had like a big marquee talent up front that could put points up. They had the Paul Kariya, the version of him that was on his last legs from all those concussions. It would have been interesting to see what he could have been like if he was healthy. One of my favorite, same deal with Peter Forsberg, who tried to resuscitate his career there as well. But when he came to the Capitals, I mean, I feel like he didn't have the tools that some of the great Stanley Cup winners have had in Nashville. He has that here. And the excuses are running out for me. Barry Trotz, like, in order for Trotz to come back next year, I know that this is like hefty pressure, but, and based on the team that we have this year, it's probably impossible. But Trotz would at least have to go into a lengthy 6 or 7 game series in a conference final, probably win a Stanley Cup or at least make the Cup final in order to even fathom bringing it. Getting to the second round is not good. Sorry. This franchise is eroding the greatness of one of the best players of all time. I don't care what people think of Alex Ovechkin in terms of commitment and his back-checking ability. He is inarguably one of the greatest offensive talents the game has ever seen. And the franchise is wasting him. We all know that. That's not a big secret. I just don't think that if Trotz can at least make the conference final, that what on earth would be the reasoning for bringing him back? Everything over his 4 years, this is his fourth season as the head coach, everything is down. Our shot suppression numbers are through the roof. Our shots for are down. Our 5-versus-5 goals for percentage is way down. And our defensive numbers and our Corsi and I know people aren't a huge fan of analytics necessarily, but our puck possession numbers are way down too. They're at 4-year lows under Barry Trotz. So unless we have some unheralded, unbelievable run of success in the playoffs, why the hell would anybody want to support bringing him back? And in terms of guys we could sign, well, Daryl Sutter doesn't have a job. He was on TSN Trade Center this year, breaking down trades. A guy who could really drill a better system for the Capitals if they want to play that big, heavy hockey style, similar to what the LA Kings did under Sutter, he'd be a guy that's available. I don't know what's going to happen in Chicago. If it would be crazy if they fired Joel Quenneville. But maybe based on the way that the team is playing right now, they would feel it's necessary to potentially make a change. And I can tell you, if Joel Quenneville hits the market, he'll be out of a job for maybe 2.5 minutes. And the Capitals have to get on the phone quickly to get a hold of him, because Joel Quenneville is a great coach. Third all-time in wins. He's got 3 cups. The guy's had success everywhere he's coached, particularly in Chicago. And he's worked with the star of star players. He's done everything for that team and really been a backbone of their success. So there's 2 guys right there that I would be interested in. Or maybe they let Todd Reardon take over. The players seem to really like him. The Capitals protected him last summer and wouldn't let other teams interview him. So they obviously see some value in him. I cannot defend bringing Barry Trotz back unless something incredible happens in the playoffs.
See, I don't know if you can go with Reardon, though, at that point, just because I feel like the team needs someone that's proven. I don't think you can go with a head coach that is in his first gig. You know, you need someone who's been there, like a Quenneville, like a Sutter, who has proven that they are not only capable of winning, but know how to do it. They need someone that's going to come in and show, look, I know what I'm doing. You guys get me these players, and I'll make this team win.
Sutter, I agree.
Or Quenneville will be out of a job shorter than Boudreau was. Quenneville will be probably fired. And
yeah, I would think so.
And the Capitals really have to worry about that time frame because, I mean, I'm pretty sure the general manager's contract is up after this year as well. So you have to think about Barry Trotz. You also have to think about Brian McClellan. Is he going to be the GM next year?
Ooh. I think so. Like I mentioned in our playoff breakdown episode I did with you guys last year at the end of the playoffs, I don't have a problem with what Brian McClellan's doing. He went for it, and the team failed. People are upset. Oh, look, we didn't do anything at the trade deadline. Yeah, I was a little disappointed too, but I mean, what did you want him to do? Like, look at the market this year. It was really sour. Like, I don't know who you get realistically based on our cap situation that is going to make a significant impact to help the team win this year and trade off the assets that you would have had to give up for them. Like Detroit. Yeah, I love Mike Green. He's one of my favorite Capitals ever. I'll tell you why people stayed away from him, because he re-aggravated that groin injury, and teams were going, okay, if we're going to get this guy who's only got 3 months left on his contract, he maybe walks in free agency. And what if we get him and we give up like a first round pick, which is what Detroit wanted for him, and maybe like a mid-tier prospect, and then he gets hurt and we don't even have him for our playoff run? That's a big reason why teams stayed away from him. You know, let's imagine he was healthy and the Capitals had an opportunity to get him. Well, again, is adding Mike Green in the way he is now, if we're talking about 23-year-old Mike Green that scored 30 goals, like, yes, take everything. Take everything we have. But we're talking about 31-year-old Mike Green, who's got a bad groin, he's got a bad knee, and in order to get him, the Detroit Red Wings were wanting a first-round pick in a draft that's deeper than it looks this year. It's not just Rasmus Dahlin. There's some good players to be had. And then you're probably looking at giving up a prospect like a Ryan Johansson or somebody like that. Is that really worth giving up for a guy who isn't going to make that huge of an impact on a team that's already struggling defensively? I don't think so. So in terms of Brian McClellan, look at the draft record of the Capitals. He was the assistant GM under McPhee for a long time as the Capitals racked up really good draft after really good draft. Look at the guys we still have in the system. I like Lucas Johansson a lot. I think Jonas Siegenthaler is going to be a good player. Not high-end names, but I think he's going to play in the NHL. And then look at the guys that are in our lineup over all those years where McClellan was part of that scouting team alongside Ross Mahoney, who's our director of scouting. And he's going to be a general manager someday. You can bank on that. Burakovsky, Hrana, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Green, Carlson, Alzner, Holtby. Look at all these guys that are still contributing to our lineup that he was there and said, we want that guy. Brian McClellan should absolutely still be the general manager. And yeah, would I have liked him to make more noise on deadline day? Sure. But I understand completely based on the squeezed market this year why he didn't. But he should be back next year.
You look at the deal for Kuznetsov, which felt like way too much money. Then he also goes out and he gets Oshie to come back for less money than we were anticipating. So I feel like he's kind of hit or miss on a couple of different moves. I agree with you. I think he maybe comes back. He has a chance with one more head coach. And if that doesn't work out, then I think his job is on the line.
Yeah. Yeah, I could agree with that for sure. Like, of course, I remember talking about this with you guys, you know, when we were thinking about what Kuznetsov might get paid. Is it a little too much money? Yeah, probably. But I mean, you know, like he's hot right now. He's got 18 points in his last 16 games. Yeah, 7.8 is a little aggressive, but if he can be like, he's still young. Like the guy's not old. If he can round his game out a little more, and for God's sake, Kuzi, just shoot the puck, man. Like you've got such a great shot.
Backstrom early in his career, right? Like Backstrom used to never shoot
the
puck. And Coach Boudreau would be like, you know, you're allowed to, right? Like you can shoot the puck.
Exactly. Like shoot the damn thing. Like, Backstrom, too. Like, that. Him and Kuznetsov have great wrist shots. Like, they're underrated. And look at Kuznetsov the other night against Ottawa. Holy cow, that was a great game. Like, you know, he's got the skill to be a 70-plus point player. And when you look at stats around roughly where Kuznetsov's contract falls. And I think that they had to keep Kuznetsov. Because Ovechkin and Backstrom and the core of this team are still young enough and still very highly skilled and effective enough that you can't let a player like that walk and not have that supporting cast. I've been very critical of Kuznetsov, and the reason why is because I know how good he is. We all do. And he's been performing lately. He's been very, very good over this last little stretch. He's one of the few bright spots on the roster right now alongside Ovi, who's always a bright spot on the roster. But, you know, there's some contracts like the Brooks Orpik one is the one for me. And you guys know this, where I am still scratching my head when they made the signing. I went, okay, I get why you're doing this, but really 5.5 million. That seems like a little gross for a guy who basically provides no offense. His legs are falling off in front of us. I mean, the guy can't skate like it. He'd skate circles around you and I, but I mean, up against the best athletes and skaters in the world, the guy looks slow. Well, yeah. And that's the problem, right? Is you're looking at it. And I think that the reason why Trotz won't scratch him is this old school notion. We need this wily veteran in the lineup. Like, okay, but like, how good you are in the room and with your teammates and being an encouraging, wily vet, like how much does that outweigh your crap play? Like the penalties he takes are penalties that guys that can't skate and keep up with the other players take. Holds, hooks, he trips guys all the time because he's standing still and he can't keep up with them. Like it just boggles my mind that Trotz and McClellan, it just looks like two guys to me who are like, we don't want to admit we made a mistake and that we gave this guy too much money. And we like people talk about him, like Trotz talks about him like he's Mark Messier or something. Like his leadership level is just so invaluable. Like, oh my God, he comes to work every day with the best guy. It's ridiculous to me. There was a tweet I saw Ian Olin from Russian Machine tweet out. He tweeted a quote from Trotz the other day that made me laugh out loud. It's ridiculous. They asked Trotz the other day about the trade deadline and how they never really made a ton of noise and they're still kind of looking at their defense core. And Trotz goes, and I quote, "It's that time of year. We've added some people," meaning Jerebeck and Michael Kempney, "and we've got to find out what we have. Some guys who have done excellent jobs this year in Juice and Bowie are sitting a little bit right now just because we have to find out who we have. That's sort of the process we're in." What the hell do you mean? You've been the head coach here for 4 years. You know exactly who you have, Barry. And you have this Orpik character who can't skate, takes 7,000 penalties a year, and is playing the most ineffective hockey I've ever seen a top six defenseman play on a team that's supposed to be good. I don't care how hard he hits people. I don't care how nice he is to his teammates in the dressing room. And I don't care about his veteran presence that you seem to find invaluable. The guy isn't Mark Messier. Do I think he's a valuable asset to have around? Yeah, if he made $2 million. I'm sorry. Like, I just don't – it just looks, again, like two guys who just won't go, we're making a mistake, and we're hurting the team by playing this guy who's hurting our on-ice product. That's my opinion.
Now, I agree with you, Ryan. You're very impassioned. I love it. But let me play devil's advocate here just for a second because, again, I agree with you. But let's say that your captain, Alex Ovechkin, isn't Alex Ovechkin-esque where he is – we know this about Alex. He is not going to be a rah-rah, get the team riled up, come on, guys, we can do it, let's go, yada, yada, yada. He's not that type of captain. We know that. We accept that. We're okay with that. But if Ovi was more of that type of player, would we need someone like Orpik in the locker room? Because if the whole reason we're keeping Orpik is for this veteran leadership, would we need that veteran leadership if the captain was more of a, I guess, a old school leader where we're going to rile up the team?
I mean, I don't know. I guess not. Like, that's probably part of the rationale that they have in the room. Because, yeah, we know Ovi's not exactly the guy that grabs guys around the neck and, you know, pulls their bootstraps up for them. But he has done it in the past. I mean, like, you saw in Columbus there, like, he was super angry at his team as the clock ticked down in the second period. He was screaming at everybody. And I think it's not a consistent thing with Alex because he's a hard guy to really upset.
Yeah.
But when he starts feeling like he's the only guy who's consistently performing, and over his entire career here, he has been, he can start to snap a little bit. You remember the Winter Classic show when we played Pittsburgh and they were doing the HBO series for the first time? Mm-hmm. And he got in that fight in New York against Brandon Dubinsky.
Yes.
And he was cursing, he was screaming at everybody. That's what'll happen with him sometimes when he starts to go, look, we're getting our doors blown off here by a team we know we're better than. And you guys are standing around, you know, making drop passes, thinking you're Wayne Gretzky and you've got eyes in the back of your head when we should be running through these guys. And he'll snap sometimes. No, he's not the guy who's going to go in there and scream at people. But I don't buy into that so much either. Like, I don't think that guys necessarily have to be the rah-rah guy. Joe Sakic, by all accounts, and one of my cousin Chris Drury, played with Joe Sakic on the 2001 Colorado Avalanche team that won a Stanley Cup. Chris was a rookie that year. He was rookie of the year, too, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember him telling me once, Joe, I don't think, said anything all playoffs other than two times, once in the final when they were losing and in the second round when they had a bad period. Joe almost never said anything. And there were other guys in the room that said stuff. Rob Blake, Adam Foote, who, you know, is, you know, Orpik's in the type of mold of, I guess, the old school gritty defenseman. But you don't necessarily need your captain to be the guy screaming at people. You can go about your business quietly and set an example. And I think Ovechkin does. But yeah, I don't know. That's probably one of the rationales they have for starting Orpik. Like, I don't think Orpik's a bad player. I just don't think that he's the type of guy that deserves to constantly not pay for his mistakes because he's a veteran. If he's 22 and he's like Madison Bowie, you're like, yeah, you're fine with it. You're like, oh yeah, they scratched him tonight. Yeah, okay. But when you're, you know, 37 and you're supposed to have, you know, your stuff together and be a leader. So like, do that then and don't take all these bad penalties and put your teammates in a position where they're cleaning up a mess for you. I don't know.
It's interesting. Yeah. Just interesting to think about it. If Alex were to be a different player, would it make a difference? Like,
it isn't even necessary. You have other veteran guys. I mean, Matt Niskanen is a veteran guy. John Carlson,
yes,
at this point, is a veteran guy.
That's true.
Backstrom, not as chatty. Veteran guy. TJ Oshie hasn't been here quite as long. He's a veteran guy. Eller is 28, though.
Yeah, I do have to say before we leave Caps
better
World.
Than their defense is 20.
Yes. It was a very interesting game to watch late last week on Thursday, seeing the Caps in Florida up against the Panthers. It was the first game that took place in Sunrise, Florida, which was only a couple miles away from where the school shooting happened, and that was a terrible tragedy that happened in Florida. I thought the Panthers and the Capitals did just an absolutely phenomenal job at the beginning of the game. That was an absolutely beautiful tribute to all those that were just senselessly murdered. I thought, you know, it really was very powerful. They had a spotlight with the name of each one of the victims, and it was silent, and then slowly the lights went out one by one. And I thought that was just such a powerful image to see that on the ice, because it really, you know, it really made you think of those that were lost and the effect it's going to have on that community going forward. And I thought that the Panthers and the Caps went out there and did a great thing for them and, you know, put on an entertaining game, because, you know, a lot of times we do forget sports are supposed to be fun. Sports are supposed to let you escape, you know, everyday life and the stuff you're going through for like an hour, and you can focus on something else and you can cheer and boo and do all that stuff. And, I really did think that the Panthers did just an absolutely phenomenal job honoring those victims. And I thought, you know, it was an entertaining game. And, you know, I'm hoping that the community there was able to, you know, cheer on their team for an hour and kind of get their minds off of everything else going on.
Well said, Brandon.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. It was, yeah, you know, as a news anchor up here on the radio, you know, we have to talk about that stuff, and those are the worst days here. That's the aspect of my job that I like the least, is having to talk about, you know, tragic events like that. And, you know, I definitely don't want to get into the politics of it all, because it's a complex issue, and, you know, people have been arguing back and forth about it for a while now. You know, it's something that I'm certainly not used to here in Canada. People get shot here. Yeah. I mean, you know, not at school, really. It's not something that, you know, thankfully that we're very used to up here. But in terms of what you said, Brandon, I thought the Panthers did just a bang up job under the circumstances. And, unfortunately, it's the second, you know, time this year where we've had to see an NHL team take the ice and, honor the victims of a mass shooting. It's horrible. We remember what happened in Vegas. And, now we're talking about a bunch of young kids who, you know, they all probably had, you know, dreams and aspirations. You know, maybe some of them were, you know, big hockey fans. Maybe we would have ended up being friends with some of those kids. You know, you just never know. And, you know, there's no sense behind it. I thought Roberto Luongo's speech was really good. Yeah, you know, there's not a whole lot you can say. People of Parkland, Florida know that we're all thinking about them still. And, that was a tough day.
Yeah. The students went back to school, in Parkland today. I thought it was very touching to see that earlier this week that, the hockey team for that school won the state championship, for them. I mean, just, you know, thinking, it's hard to even fathom going to school one day and the next day some of your friends are gone for this senseless reason, and then you're an athlete and you still have to go out there and you have to skate and play a game. I mean, it's hard to fathom going through all that, but these students are just so courageous, and it's amazing what they're doing. And it's really sad that this was like the 18th school shooting just in 2018, and we're only 2 months in. You know, that it kind of left the news for a little bit, and then this one happened, and it was just so terrible. And it was, you know, it kind of jogged everybody back into the talk of like what to do and how to fix it. So, we'll leave the politics there. Things have to change. I'll just say that. There's a lot of different layers. It's not just one thing. But the Panthers did just an absolutely fantastic job. I think we posted the video on our Facebook page from the Florida Panthers, and it gives a little factoid about each student or teacher that was there, you know, what they were into, what their hobbies were, you know, some of the families they were in. Some of them were accepted to colleges already. So I would just say go watch that and tell your family and friends that you love them a little bit more. Just let them know a little bit more than you're used to, because you never know what's going to happen. It's scary. That's the world we live in. But all right, so I think that's it for our Caps coverage. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to go down on the farm. But before we do that, here's a word from the Baltimore Sports Report Network.
What the Puck? What the Puck is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
This is Barry Trotz. You're listening to What the Puck.
All right, everybody, here we go. We are going down on the farm. We are talking Hershey Bears and South Carolina Stingrays. Coach Dan, what's going on down on the farm?
Well, the past week, Hershey went 1-1-1, so there's some consistency
there. All right.
The win over Hartford. The Bears are currently 7th in the Atlantic Division with a record of 23-26-8, which is good for 54 points, 23 back of first place Lehigh Valley. Down in South Carolina, the Stingrays went 2-0 with both of the wins being over Brampton. Again, not the place from the Simpsons we were talking about last week. They are currently 2nd in the South Division with a record of 35-11-6, which is good for 76 points, which is 2 back of first place Florida. However, Florida's played 2 more games in the past. So there's a chance here for Stingrays to go number 1 in the South Division.
Ooh.
And they'll be back at it. They're actually back at it as we speak. They're on the road in Cincinnati, followed up with a game on Friday and Saturday in Toledo. And then they play on Tuesday in Greenville. Now, yeah, somehow that's what's going on down on the farm.
So, Ryan, you're still with us. I don't know. Are there any, like, Caps prospects that are in any of the leagues that you cover, or any of the ones that are in Canada that we normally don't talk about?
Not really right now. Certainly not anybody that's of a ridiculously high profile, I would say. That'll probably change this June. You know, it all really depends on where the Caps pick will fall. Of course, you know, based on rumors we heard at the deadline, you know, when we reach the draft is the new deadline. That's where all the crazy stuff happens. So maybe the Capitals won't even have a first round pick when the draft starts, because that's when everybody really gets their wheeling and dealing done, it seems now. And people will have a bit, you know, a bit of a clear picture of their cap. But there's not anybody up here that we're really, you know, tracking that's looking to make a huge impact on the Caps roster in the next couple of years. I'll tell you one thing, though. I don't know how much KHL hockey, you know, people are watching, but, man, Ilya Samsonov, I can't wait until this kid gets to the NHL. He is so good. I said it the last time I was on the show. I'll say it again. He is the best goaltender not playing in the NHL by a landslide.
Wow.
I can't even think of a guy that's close. He is so good and so dominant in a league with men and pretty skilled men over there. That's a really good league. He's just unreal. He's got all the tools to become an elite goaltender. And I didn't love the pick when they made it, but the Capitals have a guy in the system here that could, you know, if they decide to keep him and wean him in to potentially be the heir to Holtby, or if they use him as a trade chip, I'll tell you what, if they go the trade chip route with him, they better get something darn good in return, because this kid is the real deal.
Wow. Well, if you're Brandon, you'll want them to trade him for Patrick Kane.
I'd be okay with that.
No!
Yeah, great. Yeah, sure.
No, Patrick Kane is no.
Come on. He'd love it here. I think he'd love DC. I think he'd be fine.
Maybe. Yeah, he probably would.
All right.
He'd be punching everybody.
Oh,
man, you put him on the Metro down here?
Well, I mean, you go on the Metro down here, I want to punch people. I mean, it's just terrible.
Oh, man.
All right.
Got your pennies.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for Down on the Farm. Go Bears. Go Stingrays. Now let's go around the NHL. everybody. Welcome back. Here we go. We're going around the NHL. Plenty of stuff's going on. The NHL's getting ready for that stadium series. We got a couple teams that have welcomed back the women's U.S. hockey team. Sorry, Ryan. Coming up with the gold medal at the Olympics this year. But Coach Dan, tell us, what is going on around the NHL?
That was mean.
It was not mean.
It's not mean.
It's true. Not mean.
Look, we beat you guys four straight times, so you can have
it.
One.
Right. You know,
I didn't even think about it. And you said it, and I was like, whoa, awkward.
Yeah. Well, it's been since '98, right? You guys, Canada has won gold since '98, right? I mean, that's a long time.
Oh, it was funny.
Enjoy it.
It's not like the men were going to do anything.
Oh, man, that was bad.
Let's not talk about the men's team anymore.
Oh, yeah, we forgot to say, welcome back Chris Bork. He showed up to Hershey today.
Yeah.
Welcome back to town.
Whoops. Let's start with the fun stuff, as the trade deadline was this past Monday. Now, there are a bunch of smaller deals, and in the interest of time, because we've been talking forever, here are a few of the bigger or more interesting trades that went down over the past week and at the deadline, and I didn't organize them in terms of players going to which teams, so we're just going to go through it basically in the order that they happened. New Jersey brought in forward Michael Grabner from the Rangers for defenseman Igor Rykov. That guy has a cool name, by the way. I like that. Igor always sounds like a fun name. Igor Rykov and a 2018 second round pick. I believe, if I read this correctly, the first trade or the biggest trade, something along those lines, between the Devils and the Rangers. That sounds about right. Something where I imagine they don't like each other very much. They're probably not willing to, agree to things. All right. So we had a really weird, confusing trade apparently between Pittsburgh, Ottawa, and Vegas that was making my head hurt at one point when I was trying to read it. So basically it all came down or went down this way. Pittsburgh brought in forwards Tobias Lindbergh, Derek Brassard, and Vincent Dunn, as well as a third round pick. How they got a pick out of this, I don't understand. A third round pick in 2018. Ottawa ended up with defenseman Ian Cole, who they then sent to Columbus for forward Nick Moultrie. Sure. And a third-round pick in 2020, goalie Philip Gustafsson, and a 2018 first-round pick, as well as a 2019 third-round pick. Vegas got forward Ryan Reeves and a 2018 fourth-round pick that originally belonged to Vancouver. Vegas will also retain 40% of Derek Brassard's salary. Everybody still with me? I have a headache now. It's very confusing. Anyways, the Islanders brought in Brandon Davidson from Edmonton for a 2019 third-round pick. I always find it funny when you hear a trade and then there's like a draft pick from like 4 years down the line. I understand 2019 is next year, but I always find that very weird. Boston isn't playing around as they brought in Rick Nash from the Rangers for forwards Ryan Spooner and Matt Beleski, defenseman Ryan Lindgren, and a 2018 first-round pick, as well as a 2018 seventh-round pick. Seventh-round picks, too. You're like, here, just take it. Like, we don't want it. Toronto brought in forward Thomas Mechanic, Kyle Bonn from Montreal for forwards Kirby Reichel, defenseman Renat Valiev, and a 2018 second-round pick. Let's go back and see how many names I mispronounced later on. Chicago sent forward Ryan Hartman and a 2018 fifth-round pick to Nashville for forward Victor... Why is there a J? Edsel. And a 2018 first-round pick, as well as a 2018 fourth-round pick. Winnipeg coming out of nowhere, getting Paul Stastny from St. Louis for forward Eric Foley, a 2018 first-round pick, and a conditional 2020 fourth-round pick. Former Capitals and Brandon's favorite player of all time, Jason Chimera, he was dealt from the Islanders to Anaheim for forward Chris Wagner. San Jose, who had picked up Eric Fair, we talked about this last week, where they aren't playing around. They went out, and they're taking a chance on forward Evander Kane, as they got him from Buffalo for forward Danny O'Regan, a conditional 2019 first-round pick, and a conditional 2020 fourth-round pick. What those conditions are, I don't know. I didn't look into it that closely. Columbus brought in forward Tomas Vanek, who I honestly forgot was playing for Vancouver, for forwards Juuse Jokinen and Tyler Mott. Did I hear right? Jokinen's on his fourth team this season.
Really? Just this year?
That sucks.
Holy cow.
I think I heard it on the radio, and it was Ken Sauerbrunn they were talking about. I think he was saying, like, well, at least there's four teams that wanted you at one point. Or something along those lines. But, like, if you're him, you're like, come on, guys. Like, let me unpack. Vegas got Tomas Tatar. He's got a funny last name. From Detroit for a 2018 first-round pick, a 2019 second-round pick, and a 2021 third round pick. Oh, God. All right, hang on, deep breath. The Rangers continue their sell-off as they sent defenseman Ryan McDonagh and forward JT Miller to Tampa for forwards Vladislav Nemtsnikov and Brett Howden, as well as defenseman Libor Hayek, a 2018 first round pick and a conditional 2019 second round pick. And finally, in the trades, New Jersey's got forward Patrick Maroon, he's got a funny last name, from Edmonton for forward J.D. Dudek and a 2019 third-round pick. Brandon, guess what happened?
What's that?
Nobody got suspended or fined in the past week!
What?!
Yeah! Everybody learned how to behave themselves. Congrats, guys.
You're going to
act like freaking adults.
I do want to say real quick about the trades.
There are a lot of them, but I'm out of breath.
That's a lot of them. NBC, I think it was the NHL on NBC Facebook page, put out a meme that actually made me laugh out loud, and it was from the Fresh Prince finale of Will Smith standing in the living room where it's completely empty, and it says what it looks like, or a live look inside the New York Rangers locker room.
I think I saw that. That was funny.
That was really good. I'm not usually a fan of, like, you know, big companies like that and putting out a meme, because I kind of feel like they need to be, you know, like, natural or whatever.
Impartial.
Right.
But at that point, there's looking at the Rangers going, nah.
Yeah, but that was just, that was gold. I like that.
That was good. But yeah, that's the news from the past week in the NHL.
Well, you did miss one little piece. I don't know if you saw this or not, but the NHL draft, I think in 2019, is going to be in Vancouver.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Vancouver.
That'll be fun. Vancouver, I think that's the third time that they're going to get to host the draft now in Vancouver, which will be interesting. I'm more interested to see if all the people in their front office still have their jobs when they host that draft. I mean, their asset management there's, you know, pretty bad. That Rangers trade too, like, a lot of people were upset. Like, my best friend's a Rangers fan. He was like, I don't really know how I feel about the trade. I'm like, I think he made it away pretty well. You know, everybody knew McDonagh was going to go. Giving up JT Miller, he's had a bit of an inconsistent start, but I think he's a good young piece. But, you know, the picks, Nemestikov's a really good player. I saw him in junior here too with the London Knights, and he was always a really highly skilled guy and fits right in with the mold of the young direction they want to go. And people forget, like, New York had a really good draft last year. I really like the centerman they took in Philip Chytil. I think that he's going to be a really, really good player. And you guys might remember from the World Juniors this year, the young Swedish kid that threw his silver medal into the stands. That's Elias Andersson. And I love this kid. I really, really think that this kid's a gamer. He reminds me a little bit of, maybe not the same skill level, but in terms of compete, he reminds me a lot of Peter Forsberg. He's got the heart of a lion, and it showed there when he made that, albeit unfortunate, choice to throw his medal away. But the kid's a gamer, man. He hates losing. And I think the fans in New York are really going to love that kid. So it's not all doom and gloom in New York right now. I know it sucks to kind of have your team, you know, say we're not good enough and sell everybody off. But they have some real nice young pieces. And I think that they added a good amount of talent in that McDonagh deal.
Well, they got New York right now are the Yankees, because Mets.
Yeah.
Mets suck.
Well, they're pretty good.
Knicks suck. Rangers suck.
Yeah, they do. They're not good.
Giants suck.
No. Oh, boy, what a tire fire they are.
You're struggling right now.
So I guess before we get out of here, we should bring up the Olympics just to kind of cover what happened there hockey wise. So like we said, the women's team for the U.S. brought home the gold. I thought that was a fantastic game, U.S. Canada. I mean, the two of those teams just have such a history in the last 4 years since Sochi, going back and forth. You constantly are going to see those two teams up against each other. And then for the gold medal game for the men's, it was OAR, the Olympic Athletes of Russia, against Germany, which I was absolutely shocked that Germany got that far. They didn't even qualify for the Sochi games 4 years ago. Overall, though, I mean, the Russia-Germany game was pretty good. I mean, the way the announcers were acting, it was as if Russia had already won the gold at the beginning of the game. Like, they're like, ah, it's nice. Isn't that cute? Germany thinks they might be able to win something. Ah, those kids. But no, it was actually a pretty competitive game. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was. That was a really good game. Give Germany credit. You know, they came in, they took the most of their opportunities. They beat Canada along the way. In terms of the women's game, like I wish, like they got to stop doing shootouts to, you know, solve medal games. They have to stop doing this. I'm not saying that because Canada lost, because like, you know, the USA could have won, but I would rather the USA win on a goal, you know.
Sure.
The shootout thing is such garbage, but props to that US team, man. Like, that's a really, really good team, you know. Amanda Kessel, Hillary Knight, like, they have real big stars on that team. Hillary Knight might be the best female hockey player on the planet right now. I got to make sure my girlfriend doesn't hear this because she'll kill me for saying that. But, you know, props to the U.S., man. Like, they always have a really good team, and they're the consistent threat to Canada, so good on them. In terms of the men's tournament, oh, my God, that was just hard to watch.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the not having the NHL players there. Like, I get why it all happened, and you can argue about the politics of it back and forth, but it was, you know, on our show here today, we were talking about it, and I basically equated it to, it was like chocolate bar. And then taking the chocolate bar away and making them eat saltine crackers instead. It was so stupid. Like, we're so used to such a high bar that, oh my God, it was terrible. I said right from the start the Russian team was going to win, and if they didn't, they should all retire, because they walked in with the highest talent pool there just by virtue of having Kovalchuk and Datsyuk on your team. I mean, you're walking in there with an absolutely loaded roster offensively. They were the two best players talent-wise in the tournament. I'll tell you what, though, another kid, I talked about Ilya Samsonov for us. The kid in that game that took it over, who had 4 points, including the game winner in overtime, that Kirill Kaprizov kid is a steal by the Minnesota Wild in the fifth round. That kid is going to be dynamite. If they can get him to come over, he is a tremendously talented player, and he was one of the only bright spots of the tournament for me watching him play. But in terms of the quality of the tournament itself, it was just bad.
Yeah, I mean, I got up 7 in the morning on a Saturday to watch the U.S.-Russia or OAR game, and man, I really should have slept in for that. That was just some of the worst hockey I have seen in a long time.
Should watch soccer, man.
Dan's been trying many years to get me to do that. And
still watch Arsenal.
Yeah. And I got my Jack Wilshere jersey from the Emirates back here.
I saw that.
I was at that game when we beat Chelsea 2-1.
Oh, man, Phil was going to be so mad.
Congratulations.
One more thing we got to bring up before we leave the Olympics, though, is I don't know what's going to happen, if there is going to be anything at all. But, you know, everybody knows the whole thing with Russia. There was doping involved. They couldn't represent their country. After the Russian players won the gold medal, the Olympic anthem started playing, and they actually sang the Russian anthem, which apparently is in violation of a rule that if you can't represent your own country, you can't sing the anthem or whatever. So I don't know if there's going to be, you know, repercussions for that. I don't know. Like, Russia's already not allowed to play in the Olympics this past time. Like, what else are they going to do to the team? But I thought that was kind of interesting that the Russian players really didn't care at that point and sang their anthem anyway.
Yeah, well, that's so stupid. Like, why should you? I mean, like, yeah, they have a serious problem in that country, and obviously it's, you know, it obviously goes pretty deep. It, you know, you can't have this much widespread doping without it going very deep. I don't believe for a second that any of the people there in the higher-ups of power, like the Putins and the Vitaly Mutkos, all those guys, come on, man, it's Russia. You knew what was happening, and you probably had a hand in it, some of you. And I don't think they really care what the rest of the world thinks of them. This is Russia we're talking about. In terms of the players, though, singing, like, just screw off already. Like, the IOC, I'm so fed up with these losers at the International Olympic Committee with these stupid rules. And then they whine when the NHL players don't come. And, like, we talked about that on my show today, too. I hate agreeing with Gary Bettman more than any other human on earth. Trust me, I really don't like the guy. But I completely understand why the NHL and the NHL owners are like, let me get this straight. You want us to give us all of our best employees pause our league and our work schedule for 2.5 weeks, not have their insurance covered, not get any financial, material, whatever benefit from this. Oh, and by the way, while all of our best employees are over there pumping up the ratings for your event, we can't even use the video content because you keep all the rights to the video and we can't even show our employees over there making you money. It's so stupid, man. The International Olympic Committee is a joke, and they know they're a joke too, and they're so ignorant that they will never do anything about it. And that's why I would be shocked at this point if the NHL's there in 2022.
Yeah, like you said, I really hate the fact that I'm like, you know what, Gary? You got a good point. Because when Gary Bettman makes sense, something's wrong with the world. Because, I mean,
I know.
He's done so many dumb things, but then he brings all this up, and I'm like, he's right. I hate saying that.
It's not fun.
No. All right. Well, I think that is pretty much it for What the Puck this week. If you want to continue the conversation with Coach Dan, Ryan, or I, you can tweet to any of us. You can tweet to me at Brando Cash. Coach Dan, where can people tweet to you at?
You can find me on Twitter at WTB Coach Dan, talking all kinds of Capitals related stuff or about Arsenal. Yeah! Or other sports-related items, other things that I find interesting. But, Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter, man?
Well, finger out. Secondly, my personal Twitter is at CKNX_Drury. That's D-R-U-R-Y. You can tweet at my new show, MWO Sports, at MWO_Sports. We got a Facebook page under the same name where you can find all of our episodes. That's basically the best way to get in contact with me online. I don't want to be this guy, but I got to say one last thing. I don't want to end things on a somber note, but I feel like it's appropriate. Jordan Staal, I think everybody in the NHL community is thinking about him right now. Obviously, the passing of his infant daughter this week. I know people up here in Ontario, the Staal family's from Thunder Bay. I know a lot of people up here are definitely thinking about the Staal family right now. And thumbs up, Jordan. We're all supporting you.
Absolutely. All right, Ryan, but before we get out of here, why don't you tell us a little bit about your show, MWO Sports. Tell us a little bit about that, what you cover, and how people can tune in and check you out.
MWO Sports, it's a new thing we're trying here at CKNX just to build up our sports content. We basically cover all different types of sports. We talk about baseball, basketball, football, hockey, you know, even golf sometimes. We have a lot of big guests on here. A lot of the Sportsnet and TSN guys have joined our show. People throughout the sports world and the broadcasting world jump on the podcast and give us their thoughts. And of course, we cover a lot of the local hockey and local sports here in Midwestern Ontario. You can find us on cknx.ca under sports. That's our news website, and you can find the show there. We're also on SoundCloud, and we'll be on iTunes pretty soon as well.
All right, very cool. So if you want to stay connected with What the Puck, make sure you go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/whatthepuckpod. Same thing for Twitter, at whatthepuckpod. Whenever a new show comes out, you will be the first to know. And we're sharing all kinds of cool stuff. We shared a picture of Groovy's new lid for the Stadium Series game coming up. So we shared that over on our Facebook page. Check it out. Lots of stuff going over there on Facebook. Now, we do the show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Write us a review on the Apple Podcast app or on iTunes, and let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat and Vero. Anybody else on Vero? That's a thing now, apparently.
You and Chris Hardwick, I think.
I have yet to be able to post pretty much anything on this broken app, but it's number one in the App Store. So if you're on Vero, try to tell people about us because, you know, that'd be great. And, maybe there's more hockey fans over there than I know of, but Vero is a thing. So check us out over on Vero as well. All right. So let's talk about the games coming up before we talk again. So, of course, on Saturday, March the 3rd, the Caps are in Annapolis, Maryland. It's the state capital of Maryland, and they're playing at Navy Stadium up against the Toronto Maple Leafs. That game is at 8 o'clock, and you can watch that in the U.S. here nationally on NBC. Then the Caps have 2 days off, and they're heading out west to Anaheim. They are up against the Anaheim Ducks, 10 o'clock Eastern time start here for us, NBC Sports. It's a national game, NBC Sports, or locally NBC Sports Washington. Hey, this is great. I got to work till 11 that day, so I'll be getting home right as the game ends. That's great. All right, and then we'll be back next week to talk a little bit more about Caps hockey. Ryan, man, thank you so much for joining us and talking with us the whole hour. Man, we went an hour and 40 minutes. This might be the longest podcast we've ever done. Thanks for talking with us, dude.
Guys, it's always a pleasure to chat with you boys. I love your show, obviously. I listen to every episode. I think you guys do a great job. And, hey, you know, at some point, if I'm down there or you're up here, we'll hook up. I'll buy you a Tim's, and we'll get it all figured out, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, I'm looking at flights right now. Thanks so much.
Oh. Box of Timbits for you right here, brother.
Yes, all right. All right, guys, that's it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Everybody, say it loud, say it proud. Let's go, Caps.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by DJ Wolfman. Voiceover by Sarah Jacks. For more information, go to brandocash.com.